From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's capital city takes a big hit from Mother Nature during the pre-dawn hours this morning.
It was pure chaos and destruction. There were roofs and walls ripped off of buildings.
Also this week, a Northwest Florida law officer's fatal shooting of an Air Force airman raises many questions and plenty of grief.
My provider, my baby, was my everything.
We'll also explore the unusual origins of the biggest gift ever to Florida A&M University and look into an ongoing spat between the capital city and the statewide union representing its firefighters. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. Severe weather this morning devastated homes and businesses across Tallahassee. As of this afternoon, one death had been reported, and almost half of the city remained without power. Tristan Wood spoke with some of the people who were impacted.
Downed trees, twisted power lines, and discarded roofs are blocking dozens of roads throughout the city. Southeast Tallahassee and the areas surrounding Florida State and Florida A&M universities received some of the most extensive damage. Lauren Heinrichs, a recent FSU grad who lives close to Doak Campbell Stadium, says she was out walking her dog when she saw what looked like a tornado coming down her street.
But it was literally like a wall of, like what they say, a wall of wind coming. And like all the trees all of a sudden were just like going crazy and there was rain. And so we ran back inside and immediately right when we got back in, everything just like the house was shaking. We heard trees breaking.
A downed tree landed on the hood of her car. Another speared into her home. Despite the destruction, Heinrich says she and her dog are doing okay. Timothy Hernandez, a student at Tallahassee Community College, needed friends to come pick him up after the storm's damage blocked his driveway.
A whole tree in front of our yard, power lines down. We can't even back out. None of my roommates can back out of their driveway. Our second tree hit someone else's car, one of my roommate's girlfriend's car. Her whole roof is caved in. Trees are blocked up on the street and everything.
Railroad Square Art District also saw devastating impacts from the storm. Tallahassee resident Ryan Smith went to check on several of his friends' art studios.
It was pure chaos and destruction. There were roofs and walls ripped off of buildings, fiberglass and insulation absolutely everywhere.
Horrified tenants stopped by after the storm to assess their businesses. Keith Pogue, owner of North Florida Collective Plant Shop at Railroad Square, says the damage could cause them to shutter indefinitely.
We were already in the news earlier this week about the road closure affecting our business. So I don't know when we'll actually, I don't know if we can reopen because our roof is half gone.
He pointed out that the storm wasn't even a hurricane. He says he's concerned about what impacts the city might face if it receives a direct hit this hurricane season.
The weather is just not getting any better. Like, if this is a storm but not during a hurricane season, I don't know if getting hit by a hurricane would be very good.
A full tally of the damage across the city has not yet been conducted. I'm Tristan Wood, and stay safe out there.
And while we're talking about the storm situation, Governor Ron DeSantis declared a state of emergency for 12 counties after thunderstorms and at least three confirmed tornadoes barreled through Tallahassee early this morning. It resulted in at least one local death, left more than 80,000 people without power. Casey Chapter reports the county's emergency management director is viewing this as a test run for the upcoming hurricane season.
The National Weather Service's Tallahassee office had to shelter in place early Friday morning. Meteorologist Mark Wool said storm assessments will be ongoing for the next 2 days.
There was widespread straight line wind damage, and there will be a few areas that ultimately will get assessed as tornadic, based on what we were seeing on radar before the radar went out.
Cleanup is underway across the city and county where the storms tore off rooftops, twisted and mangled trees, and sent construction equipment flying. Branches, leaves, and other debris littered the ground as cars attempted to weave their way through downed limbs, power lines, and intersections gone dark. Leon Emergency Management Director Kevin Peters said crews are working to clear it all.
Again, this was a countywide impact, so there are roads, you know, from east to west, north to south. So it is going to take them a little bit of time. So encourage anybody that may be out and about to drive with caution.
Peters said the storm should serve as a reminder of how to be prepared for emergency situations and natural disasters.
You know, I think today's storm highlights the importance of preparedness. I know a lot of times we think about getting ready for hurricane season, which is coming. Just making sure that all year long our residents have an emergency plan. Know what you're going to do during a disaster or an emergency.
Officials are urging citizens to be aware of traffic rules during and after storms. An intersection with a broken stoplight should be treated as a four-way stop. Any downed electrical wires should be treated as if they are live. The city has called in other utilities to help with restoration efforts and are saying it will likely be days before most of the lights come back on. I'm Casey Chapter.
Coming up on Capitol Report, a big donation to Florida A&M University turns out to have more than a few possible problems connected with it.
However, no independent third-party organization or agency has valued these shares at all.
And a newly signed law about occupational hazards for firefighters has sparked yet more potential conflict between the Florida city and the state's firefighters union.
For the city to say your service doesn't, it's just a job. It's more than a job.
Florida investigators are looking into a fatal shooting involving a deputy and a black United States airman. The shooting happened last Friday, but as Adrian Andrews reports, there are unanswered questions about who was in the wrong. And a warning to listeners, this story contains sounds of gunfire.
Body camera footage shows the moment an Okaloosa County Sheriff deputy shot 23-year-old Roger Fortson.
Step out. Drop the gun! Drop the gun!
Fortson later died in the hospital. He was a special mission aviator in the U.S. Air Force and was staying at his off-base apartment in Fort Walton Beach. His mother, Mika Fortson, described her child as a loving and hardworking person.
My chef, my counselor, my provider, my baby was my everything.
Okaloosa County Sheriff Eric Aiden says the deputy who shot Fortson was responding to a disturbance call made by one of Fortson's neighbors. In the body cam footage, you can see one woman directing the deputy to Fortson's unit.
Which room is it?
1401.
1401, okay.
But the girl sounded scared, the one that called. She was like, it sounds like it's getting really out of hand.
So it's hit number four, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fortson was alone in his apartment FaceTiming with his girlfriend when the deputy approached his door. The camera briefly shows the apartment number as 1401. He proceeds to knock on the door twice.
Sheriff's office, open the door!
As Fortson opens the door, you can see him holding a gun downward in his right hand. The deputy yells for Fortson to step back before shooting him multiple times. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who's representing Fortson's family, notes Fortson was a senior airman with combat experience. He says he did not hear the deputy announce himself and grabbed his gun for his own protection. The deputy's claim of self-defense, he says, doesn't hold.
You put out this narrative demonizing his name as if he did something wrong.
Okaloosa's sheriff pushed back on Crump's comments, saying he wants to remain transparent. The deputy has been placed on administrative leave. Roger's mom, Mika, says her son did nothing wrong and alleges the deputy and the sheriff's office need better training to ensure people are kept safe.
I know my son did not do anything to you guys. If he scared you or if you guys wasn't trained properly, I apologize.
This investigation is ongoing. Florida's Department of Law Enforcement is handling the case. Once complete, the state attorney's office will determine further action. I'm Adrian Andrews.
On Capitol Report, a week ago, I remember, Florida A&M University was celebrating mightily because the largest gift in the school's history had just been announced for FAMU. And suddenly, in a matter of days, things have kind of changed, and perhaps not for the better, which is why Lynn Hatter joins us right now to explain what the heck happened, Lynn.
It was a financial gift, and it came in the form of $237 million worth of shares in a privately owned company run by a man named Gregory Jerami. He is a Texas-based hemp investor. And he is the one who made this donation to Florida A&M University. And at the time of its announcement, which was last Saturday at FAMU's commencement ceremony, the largest financial gift in the history of any historically black college or university.
But what was the problem with that?
A lot has come out about Jerami's background, which is extremely mercurial. He has issued multiple conflicting statements on his business background, his family history. There is very little that's known about him. His website lists a person as the CEO who claims that she has never been the company CEO for it. There was a phone number there that went to a Google Voice number, and there was a Gmail email address. And those were some of the first flags that people found with respect to this donor. Then we started looking deeper, and we found that he had attempted to make another substantially large gift to another university last year, Coastal Carolina University. And that gift did not come to pass. In fact, it sort of fell apart once that university asked Jerami to basically make some sort of a smaller good faith donation. He has accused Coastal Carolina of racism. That deal completely fell through. We learned that he had also been in some sort of negotiations with Miles College, which is another HBCU, yet another gift that did not come to pass. And he had also made overtures to the University of Texas, yet another gift that did not come to pass. And so all of these things began raising a lot of questions about who is this donor and what is his financial ability to make a $237 million gift. The other thing with this gift, Tom, is that it's coming in the form of shares. Now, normally that wouldn't be a problem for a publicly traded company because you can sell your shares, you can sell your stocks, you can cash them out. They might be higher one day, they might be lower one day. That clearly depends on the market. But private shares in private companies work a little bit differently. Because Jerami's company is private, FAMU can't just take this to the market. They cannot just sell them. They would have to find another private investor to try to take them. So the conversion of these shares into cash money that the university could actually use is challenging at best. The third issue that has come up is $237 million actually $237 million?
So where do we go from here? What sparks the investigation? Who does it? What happens?
So FAMU has to first figure out how much these private shares are worth. That number was basically Jerami himself saying that that's what they were worth. He did show the university financial statements of his. The university says it met with his financial advisors, and the university clearly thought everything was on the up and up. However, no independent third-party organization or agency has valued these shares at all. So during a recent meeting of FAMU, the FAMU Foundation Board of Trustees, it came out that because the university does not have that in hand, it actually has no idea what the value of these shares are. The university admitted it was aware of some of Jerami's background and his conflicts, but it did decide to move forward with the deal anyway. And it had been relying on basically an audit of its financials that is supposed to take place in the next few months to give it a better idea of how much these shares were worth. But the other thing that's also come to pass is the fact that members of its board, both its board of trustees and its foundation board, had no idea this was in the works and had been in the works for months. FAMU President Larry Robinson basically said that he elected not to tell them because the university had signed a non-disclosure agreement with the donor and that the non-disclosure agreement prohibited him from discussing this with either one of his boards. And so you have seen over the course of these last several days what started off as jubilation really sort of descend into a lot of skepticism, a lot of consternation, and a lot of sadness, because $237 million is absolutely transformational to an historically Black college and university, many of which have been underfunded since their inception. A gift of that size is transformational to any institution. And so a lot of university stakeholders were really looking at this with hope, and a lot of that has been shattered. What's also happened, too, is it sort of made FAMU the butt of a lot of jokes. There have been a lot of memes, the ScamU meme that's going around, and the university is incredibly protective of its reputation. And so this is incredibly damaging right now. And one of the things that came up in the foundation meeting yesterday was the suggestion that the university might want to hire a crisis management firm.
What began as a simple contribution has become a source of consternation and controversy. And Lynn Hatter just brought us up to date on what's going on with it. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Tom.
In November's election, Floridians may vote on Amendment 4, which would protect abortion rights in the state constitution through fetal viability. That typically means no more than 24 weeks of pregnancy. For it to pass, at least 60% of voters across the political spectrum must vote yes. As WLRN's Veronica Saragovia reports, supporters are trying to energize the yes votes while opponents are working to weaken their support.
Sean Foreman finds everything about election season in Florida exciting. He chairs the Department of History and Political Science at Barry University in Miami Shores, where he's also a professor.
I am concerned because so many of the voters that I talk to out there, whether they're students or not, no matter what age, are just not really excited about the election.
Ever since Florida's six-week ban on abortion went into effect, Democrats hope that Amendment 4 will fire up the voters with lackluster enthusiasm about the election.
You might get more independent and moderate voters voting for the amendment, but that doesn't guarantee they're going to vote for Democrats.
Floridians may vote on amendments one way and on candidates another. Take the 2008 general election. Florida voters approved a constitutional amendment to exclude same-sex couples from the definition of marriage. But they also picked Barack Obama, a Democrat, for president. And abortion may not draw enough voters either. In 2022, Charlie Crist ran as a Democratic candidate against Ron DeSantis for governor. He put his abortion stance in commercials.
We need to elect Charlie Crist if we want to protect our freedom to choose.
Ron DeSantis has already signed a ban on abortion with no exception for rape or incest.
Foreman says Crist tried to court liberal voters.
But he still lost big time in the state of Florida and even in Miami-Dade County.
Florida's most populous county went for Ron DeSantis, breaking a two-decade run for Democrats in Miami-Dade. In recent years, Florida has gone from a swing state to a red state. The state has 5.2 million registered Republican voters and about 900,000 fewer registered Democrats. That's according to the Florida Division of Elections. The National Democratic Party is putting time and money into Florida ahead of November. President Joe Biden visited Tampa in April, and Vice President Kamala Harris came to Jacksonville earlier this month.
Florida, are you ready to make your voices heard?
Yeah.
Do we trust women?
Yeah.
Do we believe in reproductive freedom?
To get Amendment 4 on the ballot in the first place, a statewide campaign called Floridians Protecting Freedom had to gather just under 892,000 signed petition forms from registered voters all over the state. That was required by Florida rules. The campaign well exceeded that. They gathered more than 1 million signatures from people across the political spectrum. Foreman from Barry University says conservatives who want to keep abortion restrictions in place are motivating voters against the amendment.
You're going to hear from DeSantis and other Republicans about how they think this amendment is dangerous. They may even campaign on some misinformation about what the amendment would do.
Governor Ron DeSantis spoke about it during a press conference on April 30th, the day before Florida's new six-week abortion ban went into effect.
People will sometimes say,
yeah, you know, I'm pro-life, I believe that, but, you know, let the doctor make the decision, people will say that in conjunction with the expected mother. That amendment does not require a physician. You can have abortion up till the moment of birth without a physician being involved. It says a health care provider.
DeSantis said Amendment 4 would not require a physician to provide an abortion, referring to the wording of the ballot item. It reads, "No law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health, as determined by the patient's health care provider." Despite the words health care provider, Florida law only allows licensed physicians to perform abortions. Dr. Cecilia Grande also takes issue with his claim that abortions would be performed up until full term. She's a gynecologist in Miami-Dade County.
If somebody comes and they are 8 months, we don't do anything. If that patient wants to have a termination, she can't. She could have a baby and give it up for adoption, but nobody is going to terminate a pregnancy at that gestational age. I've been doing this 30 years. And never have I ever seen a case where a pregnancy was terminated after 23 weeks.
Andrea Cristina Mercado is the executive director of Florida Rising. The independent political group recently started a push to explain the amendment to voters who would benefit most from its success.
The lowest income communities are the ones that aren't going to be able to afford to travel to New York or travel someplace else to get the medical care that they need.
Her colleague, Sebastian Caicedo, recently went knocking on doors in North Miami. He works for Florida Rising as the Miami-Dade County Regional Director.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
He greets a woman who speaks mostly Haitian Creole and her son. Caicedo discussed with them the six-week ban.
And we're talking to people in the community about a new law that just became effective in May 1st. Mm. And what it is about restricting women for being able to have an abortion if they need to.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Right? And I mean.
And the ballot item to reverse it.
She says she doesn't have, like, any problem. It's just she has no choice. Like, if they want to do that with their body, you can't, like, force them not to.
Okay.
Do it.
So, you know, and then if she, when she votes in November, I mean, if the majority, over 60 people, 60% of the people vote yes, she will support it too?
Yeah, most likely.
Wonderful.
Another voter nearby feels more conflicted about abortion.
So there's a medical reason.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right? That's why I say that thing goes for me, goes both ways.
Right.
I really can't say a woman shouldn't do it, or a woman should do it.
So
it's like a 50-50 on that.
So at the end of the day, when November comes and you show up to that ballot, it's going to be a yes or no.
Correct.
So, like, we have to make a decision because that's the only way that we can change laws, right? So if we show up to the ballot, we have to make a decision.
This man said he did not vote in the last election. Organizers will continue trying to get people like him out to vote. Dr. Cecilia Grande says she's asking her patients if they're registered.
Please vote, please vote, please tell your friends to vote, because this is human tragedy. The state is making women have babies. They have to carry on a pregnancy that can kill them.
Grande herself does not perform abortions because of her Catholic faith, but she wants all of her patients and her colleagues in medicine to have a choice. I'm Veronica Saragovia in Miami.
You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, during the 2024 legislative session, lawmakers passed a sweeping bill addressing issues important to Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis. Patronis is also the state's fire marshal, and one item he wanted to be sure the bill includes is language clarifying benefits for firefighters who get cancer, which is considered an occupational hazard. Now, as Margie Menzel reports, Governor Ron DeSantis has signed the bill, opening a new chapter in an ongoing conflict between the city of Tallahassee and the statewide firefighters union.
Lawmakers first took up the issue back in 2019, when the Florida legislature passed a law deeming cancer an occupational hazard for firefighters. That's due, in part, to toxic materials in the fires they're tasked with putting out. The law grants death benefits for the surviving spouse of a firefighter who dies of cancer, as well as benefits to cover the treatment a firefighter receives. But the city of Tallahassee hasn't given all those benefits to Joey Davis, the president of the Tallahassee Firefighters Union.
I came back to work, a month and a half after emergency surgery and, having a lot of things taken out of me, I'd been in the hospital for 2 weeks. And basically a month after getting out of the hospital, I was back to work.
Davis says the city paid him his full salary while he was getting treatment, but also deducted the time from his sick leave. He filed a complaint in Leon County Circuit Court to determine whether the law covered his time off while being treated for colon cancer. Meanwhile, the statewide firefighters union also asked the legislature for help and arguably got it in the form of this year's CFO bill. Here's Wayne Bernie Bernasca, president of the Florida Professional Firefighters.
We did approach our legislature to see if we could get that clarification. The legislature passed a clarification portion of the CFO's bill, and the governor last week signed that. So our hope is that that makes it clearer for what the intent of the law always has been, so that they can apply it to the Tallahassee firefighters.
But the city of Tallahassee, thus far, hasn't changed its stance. Last week, Davis got a letter from City Clerk James O. Cook, who writes that the new law is not retroactive and would not apply in this case. Here's Davis.
So at this point, if the city does not solve the issue, they're looking to basically spend more taking it to mediation and to court than the actual coverage of my time would be.
That angers Representative Joe Casello, a Boynton Beach Democrat. He was a firefighter for 33 years. And 2 years ago, co-sponsored a firefighter's Bill of Rights.
For the city to say your service doesn't, it's just a job. It's more than a job. Call 911 and tell them, hey, come you do your job. You don't have to say anything. They're there, they're professionals. The city is not acting professional.
Casello says the legislature absolutely intended to clarify the cancer benefits. Senate Bill 989, the CFO's bill, spells out 20 individual types of cancer for which firefighters should receive benefits. Davis has been treated for one of those, and so Casello says the law should apply in this case.
Just follow the law and don't try to read anything that isn't in the bill. Doesn't say start date, July 1st, 2024. Doesn't say retroactive. It just says you got cancer, you're covered.
City Attorney Amy Toman wrote in a statement that the city is, quote, reviewing the amended law and will proceed accordingly. Davis remains hopeful.
We've been told over the last 24 hours that they are looking to review that stance. We hope that they look at the language and realize that, the right thing to do is also the easy thing to do here.
According to Bernie Bernasca, president of the statewide firefighters union, there are just two cities in Florida to challenge the benefits package. Tallahassee is one. I'm Margie Menzel.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Casey Chapter, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Veronica Zaragovia. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.